Today, I'm joined by Nick Montgomery, a player that of course has made an enormous contribution to Australian football in his time at the Central Coast Mariners. We discuss his early years emerging as a young teenager at Leeds United to his eventual switch to Sheffield United. At Sheffield United, he would go on to become a legend of the club, helping to lead them to the English Premier League, then being part of the club that would suffer a devastating relegation in very difficult circumstances. We then move on to discuss his time at the Central Coast Mariners that has been extremely successful. Having now hung up his boots, Nick is set to take on a role as the head of football at the club. We discuss his vision for the club, his vision for the role, and life after football. I hope you enjoy this chat. So thanks for taking the time to join us today, Nick. We really appreciate it, mate, especially before you take off to Vanuatu for a bit of work over there, which I'm sure we'll get to later, mate. But the point I was looking to start from, mate, was your time in the UK. Obviously, you had a hugely successful time at Sheffield United, a club you were at for a very, very long time. But how did it come about that you joined the club? Especially, correct me if I'm wrong, you were a boyhood Leeds fan.
Yeah, obviously, didn't do research, but I started playing football around 10, 11 years old, and I was picked up by the Leeds United sort of centre of excellence. Spent my school time there for up until I was about 15. And then, unfortunately, I had glandular fever, so I was sort of on and off training for every couple of weeks. I'd miss training, and it was that sort of important time when I was about to leave school and obviously look at getting a scholarship. And at the time, Leeds were flying high in the Premier League and Champions League, and they started importing a lot of Irish, Scottish lads, and as well as foreign players as well. So it was it was a busy time at the club, and I just felt that I had a better chance of moving on to a club maybe in the division below, and getting a scholarship there. So I after being there for 5 years, and I spoke to Paul Hart, who was manager of the academy at the time, and just expressed that I was looking to move on and find a better pathway for me to get into professional football. And they decided at the end of the day, if that's what I wanted to do, they would release me from my contract there and let me seek another club. And it was all happened really quickly. I was invited for a trial at Sheffield United and a few other clubs, and I went to Sheffield United for one match, and after the game the academy manager at the time, Russell Slade, who went on to manage quite a few championship teams, and most recently Cardiff and Charlton. He pulled me afterwards and said, "Oh, I want to offer you a 2-year scholarship." There was myself and Phil Jagielka that played in that game. Obviously went on to have a great career, and I sort of ummed and ahed because I had a few other trials lined up, and he sort of said, the offer won't be there for a couple of weeks, so we need your decision pretty quickly. And that was a great opportunity for me to take, and I grabbed the opportunity with both hands and left school and started on my 2-year scholarship at Sheffield United.
Mate, what was that moment like? Obviously, I imagine like a lot of young kids, football would have been your dream and everything. You would have put everything into getting to that moment. Do you feel like at that particular time when you're offered a 2-year deal, you're on that road to making it as a professional footballer, or is it more sort of like this is just another step? I've got a long way to go.
Oh yeah, I mean, to be honest, I was just delighted to be offered the opportunity. But anyone that's played in England, it's really cutthroat environment, and every single kid wants to become a footballer, so it's really tough. And if you let your guard down for one moment, there's players that will do anything to take your position. So I was lucky to join such a brilliant club like Sheffield United that had a history of producing young players. And on joining the club, it was a family club, and we had a good bunch of lads. And I lived in Diggs for a couple of years in a house in Sheffield with about 6 or 7 other players. And then the camaraderie and that team spirit, and actually training every morning, and coupled with going to school and stuff, it's a really good pathway, to a life in football. But I think from that, probably 20, 30 players we had in the academy at that time. I think there was about, three or four of us that actually made it to professional contracts and went on to play first team football. And, I think that the tiny percentage of the players that actually do it, it was, like I say, it was really tough. The first year I apprenticed, I broke my ankle pretty badly and had it reconstructed. And then I came back from that. And then my second year as a scholar, I had meningitis and spent my 18th birthday in hospital on the drip. So it was a tough two seasons for me, but I managed to get myself back, healthy from that and get back playing and scoring a few goals in the reserves before I would travel with the first team for the first time away at Norwich and made my debut.
Mate, that was the next question. The place I was going to go was your debut against Norwich at away. Correct me if I'm wrong, but how sweet a moment was that? Considering, as you said, you'd made the decision to leave your boyhood club Leeds, which obviously would have been a reasonably tough one. You then get to Sheffield United, I guess, with high hopes, break your ankle, suffer meningitis, and see a lot of guys that you would have came in at the same time that unfortunately don't progress on to a professional career. When you come out to make your debut, what's running through your head at the time, mate?
To be honest, it all happened pretty quickly. I was playing well in the youth team for a few games, broke into the reserves. I think I played a couple of games in the reserves, and I remember scoring a hat-trick away at Stockport in the reserve team, and Neil Warnock was there watching the current manager of Sheffield United. And I remember the next day after that game, I was training with the first team, and then he pulled me to one side and said, you're going to be travelling with the first team to Norwich this weekend. And to be honest, it was like, I was just so happy that, as a young kid, you sort of just take it in your stride. And I just remember being on the team bus on the way down. And in England, the back is sort of separated from the front where all the staff sit on the tables. And someone said, the manager wants to speak to you. And I went down and he said, look, I've watched you the last few weeks. So, I think you've got everything it takes. And, I want to offer you a professional contract. And, I want you to be on the bench today at Norwich. And to be honest, I was just like, again, it's like a dream come true. And, to be sat watching the players I'm on the coach with playing in front of 20, 30,000 every week, and all of a sudden you're getting thrown into the mix. It was it was a pretty special moment, and I just remember at Norwich him saying, get yourself warm, you're coming on. And I was just I was just so happy that I didn't really feel any pressure. I just went on and did perform really well for about I think it was about half an hour. I got on, and after the game I'll never forget that we lost a game, but the manager sort of came in and smashed all the older players, and then just praised me for the way that I came on and impacted the game. And from that point on, it was I was in the first team regular, and that I carried on for 12 years. So just blessed that I got that opportunity and grabbed it with both hands, and I never looked back. And again, it was a lot of hard work from there on in. That was just the start of it.
Absolutely, mate. As you said, you really quickly established yourself in that first team. And I guess probably 2005-06, I'm guessing, would have been one of your highlights in your time at the club when you guys won promotion back to the Premier League. What was that season like for you, mate? And personally, it seems like a very good one with, a certain Phil Jagielka just pipping you to Player of the Season honours as well.
Yeah, I mean, I can say ever since I joined the club, it was a massive, massive club in the second tier of English football, and we missed out in the playoff final once against Wolves, where we had an unbelievable season. We got to the playoff final, the FA Cup semi final, the League Cup semi final, losing to Arsenal and Liverpool in both of them, and we just lost out. I think we played too many games that season. I think we 60 odd games that season, and we just fell at the final hurdle, and that was the biggest game, winning promotion to the Premier League after just missing out on automatic. So it was, from that point, I knew that, we needed to keep working hard as a team. And I just remember that season, we had some older, experienced players and some young boys. There's myself, Phil Jagielka, Michael Tong, all went on to have, amazing careers playing in EPL for different clubs and even England, international level. And we had a really good mix of players, and I just remember the season we started really well. I think we won the first 10, 11 games, and we sort of cruised through the season. And towards the end of the year, we had a bit of a stumble, and we managed to, in fact, we managed to pip Leeds United just in the last couple of games of the season to win automatic promotion to the Premier League. And it was just unbelievable. Like you literally can't describe the passion of the fans, and the parties that went on, on winning that promotion. And we had the big up and top bus, and Sheffield Town City, the town centre was just packed with red and white shirts, and it was just yeah, it's one of them things you look back on. It's a little bit surreal at the time, but again, the fact that that the following season you're going to be playing in the Premier League against the best players in the world, was something that I just couldn't wait for. And when it came around, it's probably the most enjoyable season I've ever had. And again, if you look in the history books, we had a really good season that year, and the way we went down was, I don't think will ever happen again. The whole Carlos Tevez West Ham affair, where Tevez and Mascherano were owned by a third party agent, which is illegal in the Premier League rules, and it just so happened that Tevez scored about 10 goals at the end of that season, and came down to the last game of the season where we actually got relegated on goal difference to West Ham, who Tevez scored the winner at Old Trafford to beat Man United 1-0. And we knew that day going into that game that if Man United if beat West Ham, which happens every season, and should have been, well, everybody thought that would happen, and Tevez scored to beat them 1-0, and we went down by one goal difference. So it was devastating. But all that summer we were told that there was every chance that we'd be, promoted back to the Premier League, and West Ham would be docked 10 points, which is what should have happened, and they would have been relegated. But unfortunately, the powers above decided that that wasn't going to happen. So the Sheffield United owner took the Premier League and West Ham to court, and won the battle. But unfortunately, we didn't get put back in the Premier League. I think we just won £50 million actually off West Ham, which didn't really help, because I think staying in the Premier League was worth about 100 million anyway at the time. So it was massive unjust. And obviously that off season we lost Phil Jagielka to Everton, we lost a few other players, and the club for a couple of years the club sort of struggled to get back towards that. We did get to the playoff final once and lost out again to Burnley. And then after that, the club got relegated to League One, and that's when I decided that it's a good time to move on and try a new adventure.
Absolutely, mate. I guess obviously the end part of that Premier League season was hugely difficult, and as you said, it dragged on for quite a while as well too, I guess, with the club, and especially you guys as players left in limbo as the court battle sort of went on. But how do you look back now? I guess it's we're sort of 10 years on from them. How do you look back on your season in the Premier League? I guess when you're playing, you're always wanting more, and you set your goals on the next thing, and there's not a whole lot of time for reflection. But have you sort of, I guess, had a chance to reflect on that season since then, mate?
Oh, I mean, like you say, it's a dream. I always had a dream to play in the Premier League and an FA Cup final, and I managed to play in the FA Cup semi-final. But to play in the Premier League, and you can't explain it. Every the lead up to every week and every game is just like the media is massive, and you arrive at the stadiums and it's just packed to the rafters. Some of the best stadiums in the world, that the most famous stadiums are Old Trafford's, and places like this, Stamford Bridge, and when you actually go and play there, it's just you feel like you're part of it. It's standing in the tunnel next to the players that you've admired and looked up to for years, and then when you go out and play against them, it's like I say, it's just a bit of a reality check that you actually belong there and you've earned the right to be there. And we did that season. We beat the likes of Arsenal. We drew with Man United. All the top teams. We matched them. It was just amazing, and just devastated that it was taken away so soon. And I honestly felt that you know. Well, that season we lost our top goal scorer, Rob Hulse. We're playing away at Chelsea, broke his leg in a challenge of Peter Cech, and he was already on 10 goals that season. And, you know, we never replaced him. And to know that we went down on one goal difference was, I think, looking back, the club will just, you know, maybe think that they should have spent a little bit more money just to bring in another striker that, you know, that would have scored one goal, that would have kept us up. And, you know, in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing. But, like I say, that the whole way we went down was just totally unjust. And it's hard to not feel bitter because, you know, I had a really good season that year and was getting rave reviews. And then, you know, to sort of go down that way was disappointing. And I actually dislocated my shoulder away at Aston Villa with two games to go. And still played the last game with a badly dislocated shoulder that would, you know, pop back in. And then that off season I had to have an operation, and it was 4 months without contact. So for me it was just a devastating time, because, you know, I had interest to maybe stay in the Premier League at other clubs, and at the time with my shoulder it sort of hampered things. I found myself not having any pre-season the following year and starting the first game of the season under Brian Robson that came in as manager. So I do look back, you know, wondering what might have been, but again, I don't regret anything, and maybe that would have meant that I would never have moved over to Australia at some point. So I'm blessed that, you know, I had the opportunity to do that.
Absolutely, mate. How difficult for a club, and also I guess personally, was that sort of time afterwards when you guys come down to the Championship in very difficult circumstances as well, and it would sort of mark, I guess, a bit of an up and down time for the club, mate. Was it a pretty difficult time to be?
It was really difficult because, you know, I think everybody, you know, apart from probably West Ham fans, I think every other club in the Premier League knew that, you know, what happened was unjust, and everybody in English football. So it was tough. And just getting your head round, going from playing against Man United, Chelsea, you know, Tottenham next season, you're back in the Championship when, you know, you shouldn't be there. And then losing the players that we did. And it was, it was half a new team the following year. And, you know, you've got to do it all again. And, you know, it's probably the hardest to win promotion in the Premier League. It's no doubt the hardest thing to do in football in any league in the world, because it's the biggest prize at the end of it. It was tough. It's, you know, constantly thinking that you know it should never happen. It's football, and you've got to get on with it. And it's just all part of history.
Mate, as you said, that may. Had that had happened and you stayed in the Premier League, you may not have ended up out here in Australia. And I guess that sort of brings me on to what I'd like to discuss now is the decision to move out to the Mariners in 2012. I imagine that was, again, a pretty tough one to make, was it, at the time, mate, to leave a club that you'd been at for 12 years and move to somewhere where I'd say you probably didn't know a huge amount about the A-League and probably the Mariners themselves.
Yeah, see, the situation was that the owner of Sheffield United always had a connection with the Mariners. So I remember Trent Sainsbury coming over as a kid, and Mark Warren, some of the boys, obviously they're well known to the A-League. To have that link already, I always thought, you know, I would love one day to move to Australia and play in the A-League. So I actually had a bit of a knowledge of it. When it came around and I decided that I was going to move on, I had sort of options to stay in England and there's some good clubs, and actually Neil Warnock rang me, who's current manager of Leeds United, and I'd already turned him down twice in my career to move from Sheffield United, and he said, you know, why don't you come, and I'd already made the decision to go at the Mariners. And to be honest, at that point it did tug on the heartstrings a bit, but I thought, you know what, this is my opportunity now to go, and if I don't take it, I'll probably regret it. I went forward with the move to the Mariners, and, you know, to come out in the first season in the grand final and playing in Champions League in such a good team again, you know, good mix of experience and youth. It was, it definitely made me realise that I made the right decision, and I've never looked back since.
Absolutely, mate. How was the period of adjustment? Obviously, life on Terrigal is probably pretty different to life in Sheffield for your family, but also on the pitch as well too. I'm sure it was a pretty different probably style of football and way of playing as well.
Oh, for sure. I mean, listen, everyone knows the Championship in England, where I spent most of my career in the Premier League, is probably two of the toughest leagues in the world, and the physicality over there and the speed of the game is just crazy, which is why, you know, a lot of foreigners struggle to play there. But, you know, the A-League, I always say it, I think I've learnt more tactically under managers, you know, like Graham Arnold and Paul Oakham, in terms of, you know, playing in the heat, not giving the ball away and you know, everybody understanding the positions, because, you know, when you're playing in 40 degree heat, if you keep giving the ball away and rushing it forward, then you're going to do a lot of running, and you know, it's going to be a tough 90 minutes. So for me, it's been a really good education, and to have, you know, 14 years in England and 5 years in the A-League, it's going to hold me in good stead for, you know, down the line, where, you know, when I, you know, hopefully we'll one day get into coaching, you know, being a head coach somewhere.
Absolutely, mate. When you look back on your time at the Mariners, now having, I guess, pulled down the curtain on your professional football career to take on a new role with the club, what are the sort of highlights and the things that, I guess, that you're most proud of during your very successful time with the club?
Obviously, winning a grand final, and, you know, for me that was amazing, my first season. But, you know, playing in Asian Champions League against, you know, Japan's best, Korea, China. Again, for me, that was a great education that I would never have had if I stayed in England. And, you know, meeting some fantastic people and ex-teammates. You know, that's still some of my best friends now. And, you know, not just that, it's meeting people in Australia as well, and some of whom are like family now. So it's just been an awesome adventure. And I think, you know, the way, for me, you know, to score against the Jets in that massive game at the end of this season, where, you know, if we didn't win that game, we would probably finish bottom of the league. So to win that game, we knew how much pressure was on us to win that game. So to score the goal in that game that, you know, helped us avoid the wooden spoon and send it down the F3 was a special moment. And I sort of, you know, had in my mind that, you know, I wanted to go out on a high, and, you know, not go out where someone's saying next season, oh, he's 36, you know, maybe he should have retired. Even though, you know, there's no doubt that I could have played on in the A-League or gone to Asia for another year. So, you know, the opportunity for the job at the Mariners, you know, as head of football, was one that I'd spoken to Paul Oakham and the manager and the CEO and the owner about, and I just felt like it was a perfect time for me to transition into, you know, a new role that could hold me in good stead for the future.
Mate, could you ever imagine at that time, back in 2012, when you moved out here, that you'd be, you know, 5 years down the line, an Australian citizen, taking up a role with the club, and well and truly, I guess, entrenched in life in Terrigal, mate?
I don't know what, when I first came over, I didn't know what to expect, but I reckon after 6 months, I knew, you know, it's just a beautiful place to live, and with a young family and two young kids that, you know, that to see them out in the sun every day and in the pool and in the sea, and, you know, every day off, you know, it's like, you know, it's like you can, you know, really enjoy it with the family. I knew that, you know, it was a place I could definitely see myself long term, and, yeah, we got the residency and then the citizenship, and, you know, in terms of this role, it's always something that I sort of wanted to get into. I spent the last 4 years playing, going back to the UK and doing my UEFA coaching badges, finishing my A licence sort of this year. So, yeah, you know, I felt I was in a good position. But I was in a good position to move forward.
Mate, one of the, I guess, the key parts of your role is going to be assisting in recruiting players and getting players to come to the Mariners or stay at the Mariners. Mate, how do you see, I guess, your experiences? Obviously, you had to weigh up something back in the day of whether to maybe go to the MLS or to come to the A-League and that sort of thing. How do you think, what sort of role do you think you'll be able to play in, I guess, convincing players to either come to the Mariners or to stay at the club in your new role?
I just think the fact that, you know, I've been fortunate to have the career that I've had and, you know, be able to actually, you know, speak to players about what the transition's like coming over to the A-League, because I think a lot of players in Europe see it as, you know, it's a long way away, and, you know, they're not sure what to expect, because, you know, to be honest, apart from people sort of watching EPL coverage, maybe the Spanish league, people don't know too much about it, but you know, one thing I always tell people is, you know, the standard here is really good, and you know, don't come over expecting it to be easy, because you've seen big name foreign players come over here and really struggle. So, you know, for me, being able to sort of speak to players and use my experience is a massive plus. And you know, the sort of them fears that they have, I can, you know, let them know that they're coming over to a good league, and they're going to learn a lot and enjoy the life. So I've always enjoyed mentoring players, and for me, being involved with the young boys, and you know, I'm lucky. I've got a good knowledge of football, you know, all over the world, and contacts, you know, all over the world in terms of recruiting players and the database of players. It's for me, you know, in terms of being able to put players forward to the manager and the CEO, is you know, something that I'll enjoy doing.
Definitely, mate. One of the key things, I guess, from your time in Sheffield, you've been a player that worked all the way up from the ranks to come into the first team. And in the A-League now, we're seeing a lot of change with clubs now introducing their academies and hopefully sort of seeing a pathway from the very young players right into the first team. How beneficial do you think that's going to be, mate, that experience of having worked your way through a club and progressed into knowing kind of the structures and I guess a philosophy or whatever that you have to have at the club to be able to hopefully bring players through from your academy into the first team?
Yeah, look, you know, for me to come through the system in England, which is no doubt probably one of the hardest systems, for me to, I always tell young players now that, you know, it's not about having the most ability in the world. It's about, you know, believing in yourself and dedicating yourself, and if you do that and work hard, there is actually no secret. And you know, people look at Ronaldo and Messi and you know, these most talented players in the world, but if you actually look into them and the stories, you see that they're just not non-stop working hard, training, improving. And you know, for me to be able to sort of help these young boys and mentor them, and something that I did in my time at Sheffield United, you know, people like Kyle Walker was a young kid at Sheffield United who came through, and I had a big hand in helping him get in the first team and mentoring him, and you know, I still speak to him often now. So you know, to look back at things like that, you know, makes me proud to see, you know, flick on the EPL and see he's one of the best fullbacks in the world. I know that I helped him in, you know, some small way. You know, make a career is something that, you know, I'm blessed that I can do, and that I'll continue to do.
Absolutely, mate. No, you're absolutely spot on there, mate. I guess one sort of final thing I'm keen to discuss with you, mate, is this transition away. You're still playing in the NPL with Wollongong, but I guess you're transitioning away from life as a professional footballer. A lot of players talk about just how daunting that is, but it seems to be something that you've prepared pretty well for, and you've got a pretty clear vision in your mind of what you want to do after professional football. But what's it been like so far, mate, and what's your sort of thinking been on it for the last sort of couple of years?
Again, you know, I've had really bad injuries and stuff over my career, and you always think about what you're going to do after football. And for me, I've seen people really struggle. You know, I've seen players like Lee Hendry, who, you know, massive name back in the day, and had a fantastic career, but you know, struggled to cope with life after football. And you know, other players as well, and obviously my great friend Gary Speed, who sadly passed away a few years ago. It's, you know, it really hit home that, you know, it is a really tough transition, and people really do struggle. And ever since then, you know, I've seen out play sports people in other sports who have gone through the same problems, and it's a daunting thing to you know, to think that you've something you've done for 20 years, every single day in, day out, is sort of gone, and you've got to move on. So it's something I really tried to prepare myself for, in terms of, you know, educate myself on you know, things that can help post career. And again, you know, to do what I've done for 20 years, you know, every single day, and in the career I've had, you know, I've been really lucky. So you know, I think, you know, if you get to 35 as a footballer and you've played a long time, it's a good age, and you know, it proves that you've had a good innings, as they say in cricket. So yeah, I think there's plenty of life after football, playing wise. And you know, I spent the last 4 years doing my coaching badges and learning the other side of the game. And you know, I was fortunate that the Mariners created this role for me as head of football at the club. And it's one that, you know, when it came around, I knew that, you know, everything tied into me thinking about calling it a day, playing professionally, and accepting this job and this role at the club. You know, and seeing the club probably the last couple of years struggle, sort of maybe off the field in terms of, you know, football knowledge and probably just having the manpower in, you know, behind that, and the finances which some of the clubs have, and unfortunately the Mariners don't. So for me, I just thought it was a fantastic role to really help the club move forward.
Absolutely. And just finally, mate, for the last one, you're about to jump on a plane to head off to Vanuatu. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because it seems like that you've, in the last few years in particular, you've developed a lot of interest away from football as well too. And has that sort of made it a little bit easier to make that decision to decide to hang up your boots from professional football?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, a lot of players, and I've been there when, you know, when I was in England, all you think about is playing and training, and you spend, you know, your time after training, either sleeping in, you know, in the afternoon or watching TV, playing on the computer. And I think the older you get, once you have kids, you know, you have to focus on other things. And the Vanuatu thing came about because, a good, you know, one of my best mates on the coast, he grew up in Vanuatu. And you know, about a year ago, they had a big cyclone, and the village where, you know, all the poor people live was totally smashed to bits. And we rallied round, and I got a load of Mariners gear, and you know, we sent it over, and you know, loads of people on the coast, you know, brought stuff down, and he paid for it all to be sent over, and sort of helped rebuild the village and the lives. And to meet them people, he brought a few of them over sort of last year to stay at his house, and it's the first time they've been on an aeroplane or, you know, seen the TV or, you know, even seeing the things we take for granted every day. And you know, so that relationship was really strong, and seeing the photos of them in the Mariners stuff and the old football boots we sent over was, you know, it is a really good feel good factor. And you know, to have the opportunity to go out there for a couple of days this week and go and help them again after like another small cyclone, and take some gear out from kindly donated by the Mariners. You know, we've got a big fan club over there, and when a few of them came over, they came to watch a Mariners game in pre-season, and you know, there's a good link there now. So you know, to have the opportunity to go out there and spend a few days and actually meet them all, I'm really pleased about. And then on top of that, I became ambassador for a men's mental health organisation called Mr. Perfect. And that was a guy called Terry, lives in Sydney, an English guy, that struggled with sort of depression, anxiety and things like that. And he contacted me, you know, in terms of being an ambassador and being involved on in the sports side as a bit of an ambassador for, you know, for ex-sportsmen, sportsmen and women that really struggle. So yeah, that's been an exciting journey as well. And we had a night in Sydney a few weeks ago where we raised over $10,000, and hopefully become a registered charity soon. And you know, it's a real, you know, it's a grassroots mental health organisation. And you know, to hear some of the stories from people at these events, and they have monthly meetups in Sydney, like a barbecue, where people can go from all areas of life and just go and chat to other guys that, you know, have you know, struggled and gone through, you know, whether it's a divorce or losing people to you know, finishing sport or whatever, and just a real support group. And it's been for me, again, you know, in terms of keeping busy and focusing on other things other than life after playing professionally, it's been great for me. And you know, to give stuff back, people always ask me, you know, what I'm going to do, and I just think to be able to give stuff back, and even, you know, whether that's football knowledge or that's help or whatever, in terms of, you know, being fortunate you can have an influence on people from what you've done in your life, is, I think, it's something special and something that too many people waste.
For sure. No, thanks so much for joining us, Nick. We really appreciate it, mate. It's been a fantastic chat.
My pleasure, man. Sorry for the some of the tannoy going off in the airport.
That brings to an end our chat with Nick Montgomery. We'd like to thank him once again for all the time he gave up and wish him all the very best in his new role with the Central Coast Mariners, and we have no doubt he'll continue to make a brilliant contribution to Australian football.